From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Among those who've been hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic are artists, photographers, painters, dancers, actors, musicians, and others who rely to a large extent on people attending events, visiting galleries, and gathering in groups. Even in so-called normal times, it can be tough for artists to make decent money. Today on the program, a look at what it's like to be an artist in the Granite State during the coronavirus pandemic. If you're an artist, let us know how it's been for you. What creative ways have you developed to stay relevant to your audience when physical distancing requirements keep you far from people? What surprising ways has your art flourished or floundered during this unusual moment in American history? We also want to hear from arts enthusiasts. With museums closed, concerts canceled, how are you staying connected with your favorite artists or art institutions, including museums and theaters? Give us a call to join the conversation. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, which is NHPR Exchange. That's all one word, NHPR Exchange. And for the first part of the program today, we're going to be talking about the value of art during this time and the specific ways some in the arts community are trying to put a dollar amount to that value. We'll also talk about the impact financially on arts institutions. Again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us today, Eric Gagne. He's co-founder of The Thing in the Spring, and Broke, an annual arts event that includes arts exhibitions and takes place over several days. Broke, the Affordable Arts Fair. This year's event, originally scheduled for June 4th to 7th in Peterborough, was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This would have been the event's 13th year. Eric's also involved in Nova Arts Block in Keene. Eric, welcome to the program. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Russ Grazier, CEO of the Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, which offers music and visual arts lessons, art exhibitions, and concerts. He plays the saxophone, and since the pandemic, has been teaching music to as many as 30 students on Zoom. Russ, thanks very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
So to start, we heard late last week that the federal government's putting out another round of funding for some sectors of the economy that have been hard hit. Hospitals, we've heard, are getting help. Employers are getting help to the tune of $310 billion in the renewed Paycheck Protection Program. So much in federal aid going to treat people's bodies, keep them alive, keep the paychecks going. Russ, let's talk about the arts a little bit and say, why are the arts important during this pandemic? Why would they be deserving of some federal aid as well?
Well, I'd love to start by framing the conversation in a way that a local artist has framed it. We have an artist at PMAC who is calling the artists of our community the second responders, which I really like to think of us that way. We have our first responders out there who everyone is incredibly grateful for and incredible support of. But once we get past that first response, we have to have a second response to what's happening in our culture and within our community. So the artists very much are the second responders. These are the people who are keeping people connected in our communities, keeping our communities close-knit and together. And it's become ever more difficult since we are social distancing and in isolation and not able to meet together. So artists are doing an amazing job of finding ways to do this remotely using technology. And it's been pretty amazing to see what's happened over the past month.
I'll ask you specifically later in the program, Russ, those specific ways that artists have responded. But I want to get Eric's thoughts on that same question, too. Lots of money flowing to, I guess, how Ross would characterize the first responders. Why would the second responders also deserve priority?
Well, I think that art is definitely essential, but I'm not. I have a hard time equating them in the same way where the hospitals and the first responders, I mean, this is a global pandemic. I think creative people are by definition creative, so we're capable of getting through this and coming up with new ways to connect and new ways to bring people together. But yeah, I guess I would be a little hesitant. I mean, there, I guess more with Russ, he's over in the, on the seacoast. There's maybe a little bit more of an arts economy or more physical places that that people do connect. I think that Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It would be nice, but it's just hard for me to put it on the same level.
Understood. So let's talk a little bit about the thing in the spring which you're involved in, Eric, and involves music and fine arts. Since we'll spend some time talking about the financial impact. So how has the cancellation affected those involved in terms of their spirits, but also their pocketbooks?
Well, for us, I mean, we. At first, I was just kind of wanting to keep putting off the decision only because I felt like it was so far in the distance, being in June. But really, what has happened is that the entire touring economy for the whole world has completely stopped. So everyone's schedules. I mean, I start booking over a year in advance, so. If I'm booking a year in advance, there's a lot of other people booking a lot of other things a year in advance, at least. So when all of a sudden you're stopping it for a month, I mean, that's throwing all these schedules off. And so with everything else stopping, I just felt like it wasn't. We fundraise and we write grants and get sponsorships, so we put a lot of money together to put it on. And I just thought instead of using that money in such an uncertain time to try and keep it going, even if somehow we could do some kind of half version of the thing in the spring, you know, using social distancing and streaming and stuff. I just thought it would be better use of our funds to just wait a year, especially since we would probably be unlikely to present the same lineup because everyone's schedules are going to be thrown off. So people that we had coming that maybe were coming from Australia or from California, their schedules are going to be completely different already. So it would just have been, I think, kind of a mess.
So you're thinking the funds will carry over to the next year?
Yeah, well, just I mean, we're unique in that we just kind of exist for that one weekend, and we do some stuff in the fall. So where we do get money from local businesses to help us out, I just thought it would be easier just to put everything on hold. And you know, some of them have already paid sponsorship, and now they know that their sponsorship will just be kind of moved forward.
Okay. And how about fundraising? Has fundraising stopped because people understand that this is just going to carry over another year?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been doing anything really. I mean, we're just trying to share what our sponsors are up to. Different restaurants in the area and stores, different ways that they're coping with this and kind of redefining their place in town and in the region. So we're just trying to kind of help get their stuff out there because, I mean, what we do, it's really, I feel really good about it, but it's not happening this year, so I'm not trying to replace it with anything else.
So are the artists, perhaps the local artists who would be involved in Thing in the Spring, are they sort of bookmarking Thing in the Spring for next year to in the meantime is
Well, mostly what we do is we bring people in from outside.
it's mostly outside arts
Yeah,
musicians. Okay.
yeah, yeah. So, I mean, with Broke, for instance, I mean, that's 50, usually have about 100 applications come in for 50 spots. So everyone that had applied for that, we hadn't even gotten to the point where we had let folks know like who was accepted or who we were going to be presenting. So we'll just do that again. I mean, I know that money does come in for people involved in that, and those artists are maybe a little bit more regionally local, but we do have people coming in from other parts of New England and such. But so yeah, there's a small economy that happens on that day with the Affordable Arts Fair, and that obviously will be missed by some, but not really. I mean, we have 2,000 to 3,000 people come through one in the town hall in a 6-hour period, so it's not really something that was going to work with a global pandemic happening.
Understood. Okay. Listeners, give us a call if you have a story to tell. Perhaps you were looking forward to an event like the Thing in the Spring or Broke the Arts Fair. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. If you're an artist whose gig has been put off, tell us your story, 1-800-892-6477. 6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. We got this note from Allie on Facebook. Allie writes, any gig that has been booked 3 to 6 months out in advance has been canceled, postponed till further notice, regardless of contract, resulting in loss of income that can't be made back up. Unfortunate, tough times for all, but what's most important is the safety of our families, community, and state. We are all affected by this on some level. Artist, venue, music lover, who support all angles. Stay home and get creative with your art. We will all be stronger, well-practiced, and rested. That's the comment from Allie on Facebook. Want to turn to you, Russ Grazier, because you mentioned that you've seen among your ranks at the Portsmouth Music Arts and Music and Arts Center some creative solutions to what's going on. Can you talk a little bit about those?
We were able to shift pretty quickly to remote learning at the school. So we see about 800 unique individuals register in our programs each year. And to be able to pivot in the matter of a week, being told that we can no longer have classes, lessons, and ensembles in person, presented a significant challenge. But we've got a really good team in our administrative staff with our director of education, and our teachers really rose to the occasion. We did a week-long training of remote education for people who had not been familiar with it yet, though many of our teachers had already taught remotely in different scenarios. And we transitioned all of our private lesson students to remote weekly lessons, which has been hugely successful. And many of our ensembles and art classes have been meeting remotely as well in a very successful way. The feedback from the parents has been tremendous. And we're even starting to get new students coming on board remotely, some who wouldn't be able to travel to us. In fact, we have one student who's taking private guitar lessons from London right now. So there's some opportunities that pop up in this situation. But I have to tell you that...
Opportunities. Hold on if I could slow you down for a moment there. So you're saying that because of the pandemic and because of opening up the remote learning opportunities, you're getting people from outside New Hampshire that you wouldn't normally get.
Yes, very true. And I think that artists are very creative and resourceful and find ways to make things work. And so they were very quick to adapt to this new type of scenario. That said, it doesn't come without hardship. And I know that the artists that we work with have been hit very, very hard in their other areas of income. There are more than 22,000 New Hampshire citizens that receive their income through arts and culture sector. And it represents $2.5 billion and more each year in the New Hampshire economy. And this is being significantly hit right now. So when you ask the question of why is it important that we sustain our arts and culture organizations and the artists in our state, they represent a significant portion of our economy, larger than transportation, larger than utilities, larger than the construction sector. So, you know, we have worked hard to transition, and I think there are very positive things happening, but we are being hit hard, and it's going to be a tough road to travel as we navigate this.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Alexandra in Somersworth. Alexandra, thanks for calling. What's your story?
You're welcome. Hi, I'm the executive director of Soul City Dance. So we're a nonprofit dance studio in Somersworth. And this, when it all kind of blew up back in March, we were preparing for our annual dance festival weekend. So it was two performances, and we had master teachers from Boston coming up to teach a day full of classes on Sunday. And Friday that weekend, everything blew up, and we had to cancel everything. We've had to refund all the participants and basically took away work away from artists that were planning to work that weekend. So that's a terrible challenge. And we had a brand new ballet that we were rolling out this spring that had to be hopefully postponed, but probably not until next spring now. And we've made the transition of moving all of our dance classes to virtual learning, which has been pretty successful. However, in our area, we don't always have the internet and computers and things like that aren't always something that all of our students have access to. So we've lost students that can't connect with us in that way.
Alexandra, let me ask you, how do dancers rehearse and train and also maintain the physical distancing that's required right now?
It's been really challenging. So our kids have been up for it, which is great. We've had to change our teaching style to make things more contained. So practicing choreography has been difficult. We're hoping we get to at least do our end of the year show, but not until August. Here's hoping we can get back into the studio so we can at least all be in a space together. But what that looks like we're unsure if we're all going to have to be in masks while we teach, while we perform. Is that going to be the new norm until we can things clear up even more than that? But we also have an aerial dance program, which those kids can only condition and stuff like that, so they're unable to get on the equipment right now, which makes it even harder for them. And trying to get 7 to 10 year olds to work out every week is becoming a little bit of a challenge. We have had to be a little more creative, create more games and stuff of that nature.
So what would be the best way, Alexandra, to financially support an organization like yours at this time?
At this time, donations would be great. So if we can, we've had to open up emergency scholarship funds for a lot of our students. A lot of our parents have been laid off. A lot of them are non-essential workers. So that's been a challenge. And the scholarship funds that we dole out at the beginning of the year, so we didn't really have the ability to do that, but we're doing that because we don't want these kids to lose dance every week. We don't want them to lose their fun with their friends every week. And just trying to help us be able to pay the artists something that we've had on our books. And like we're expecting this money, and we haven't been able to do that.
Understood. So tell us again the name of your company out there.
Sure. Soul City Dance.
Soul City Dance.
Our website is soulcitydance.org, and we do have a donate button right on our website.
Well, thank you very much, Alexandra. I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Pamela wrote on her Facebook page, I'm a therapeutic musician who used to play bedside at Concord Hospital, Villa Crest Hospice House, and for CRVNA hospice patients throughout the area. I'm a Celtic harpist who used to play weddings, funerals, and civic events, and I was the manager of a monthly coffee house. All of these activities are gone for the foreseeable future. That's Pamela's experience. And let's talk to Peggy in Concord. Peggy, thanks very much for calling. What's your story?
Hello.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi. So I just wanted to echo what Russ was saying. Our community music school colleagues across the state, I think we all feel the same way, that it's always been our place to be, hope to be the safe place for musicians' incomes in northern New England. It's hard to be a freelancer in northern New England because there's historically not a lot of venues. That's improving rapidly. But this situation kind of throws it into a kind of dramatic situation when public performances aren't possible. And so I just wanted to give a little story about those couple of days around March 15th. So on March 15th, we talked and decided to close for 3 weeks to go into a really deep R&D and training situation to see how we could reinvent our teaching. And as Russ said about PMAC, our artists were just incredible at jumping right in and had some great, great conversations. And so our teaching is going really well. And along those couple of days, I think it was St. Patrick's Day, I sent out a question to the faculty saying, help me understand what else is happening in the rest of your musical income. And the answers were things like, I've lost $5,000 in the last 5 days. So the combination of St. Patrick's Day performances being canceled suddenly, as well as just the next couple of months being canceled on email. And so I think our model has, at least at the Concord Community Music School, has been we want to be the safe place for our musicians' income. We want to be that guaranteed paycheck so that for our full-time faculty, we can offer their health insurance. For everyone, we're paying their employer taxes and being kind of a protection against student withdrawals. And so at that point, we didn't know if we could guarantee our payrolls all the way through June. We were fortunate to get a payroll protection program funding. And so we can say, yes, we are meeting our faculty payrolls through June. We are contributed income-based. We're 50% contributed income in our budget. So the health of the whole organization going forward is still a question mark, and we've got to jump back into our development work. But I think it's important for the public who sees musicians as performers, and that's understandable. That's their public face. Realize that, in the words of a friend of mine saying, musicians are performer, teacher, scholars. They're all of that. And we need to support their being in New Hampshire.
Well, Peggy, thank you very much for calling. Peggy of the Concord Community Music School. We've got a lot to talk about today. Granite State Choral Society in Rochester wrote to us on Facebook to say, our concerts had to be canceled and there looks to be no viable options for performances during the summer months. We have lost necessary income from the concerts and upcoming fundraising events that have been canceled. We're hoping that the planned vocal choral workshop will be able to be held in August, but we are wary. Virtual choir experiences are only good for the singer to keep active, but do not engage the local community to continue to support the organization. So it seems like income, of course, is a big theme here this morning. We're talking about arts and artists and how they're faring during the pandemic. And we want you to call in and let us know your story. 1-800-892-6477. Worth noting that we heard recently that the New Hampshire State Council on the Arts will receive $427,000 to distribute to nonprofit arts organizations. They're working on those guidelines. We'll have details in just a moment about grants for individual professional artists. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Share your story. 1-800-892-6477, and we'll be right back. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Right now, we're speaking with prominent members of the arts community in New Hampshire about their experiences during this COVID-19 pandemic, how they're remaining relevant in a time devoted to what some may call more practical concerns, like staying away from a deadly virus or surviving an infection. We're going to spend some time talking about the ways artists and arts organizations have devised to keep the public engaged and get at least some money coming in, how they're thinking about better days ahead as well. And we'd like to take your calls if you're an artist or a lover of the arts. We want to hear your story, the way you're staying engaged. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We've got Eric Gagne with us today, co-founder of Thing in the Spring and Broke, the Affordable Arts Fair. Eric's also involved in Nova Arts Block in Keene. Russ Grazier is with us as well, CEO of the Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, which offers music and visual arts lessons, art exhibitions, and concerts. Also, many Zoom classes now, music classes on Zoom, being a great source of connection for the Portsmouth Music and Arts Center. And let's also talk to Andre. Andre Boulanger, thank you very much for calling, Andre. We'd love to talk to you. Andre is a painter, sculptor, and owner of Studio Works Art School and Custom Framing in Berlin. Thank you very much for being on the program today.
Well, it's nice to be here. Thank you, Peter. It's a real pleasure, actually. So, it's an honor to be allowed to speak representing my North Country up here.
Yeah, so let's talk about how life's been for you. I mean, how has your work and your livelihood been affected by this?
Well, it's crazy. A couple of things have happened. It was the first time in my life I've been, I've been self-employed my entire life. And I'm 63 years old now, and for the very first time, I applied for assistance from, what the heck is it, Employment Security, Unemployment Security. And it's a humbling feeling to recognize that because of this crazy pandemic, and I have to refer to it as such because nobody ever saw it coming. Or if we did, it came onto us like a freight train. Some of us saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and some of us saw it as a train. At any rate, I find that I've got an amount of cash coming in that I can rely upon because of this new support system that was offered by the Fed.
Is it more reliable as a source of income than your previous source? I mean, we've heard anecdotally that artists really have to fight for every paycheck they get. Is this a little easier in a way?
Well, the ease of it is that I know X is coming in every week. And so that's, I think, the only and certainly fighting for our paycheck is that I listened to some of your folks earlier speaking about having gigs canceled and recognizing that now there's no cash coming in because of those canceled gigs. Well, my gig have been related to, I've got a little studio up here. I offer art classes to an amount of folks, very in a gallery, and all of those have been highly affected, which is to say I closed the doors until I know that it's safe for folks to travel around. One thing I don't want to be is a contributor to anybody's illness. I don't know if I'm a carrier, and everybody else doesn't know if they're a carrier, but a lot of folks can be exposing one another. So I've avoided that, and yes, it's affected me.
Mm-hmm.
But the ease of knowing there's X amount of money coming in every single week has actually just today was the first installment of that relief. That has taken the worry of how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to pay the bills? I got to keep the light to feed my family,
mm-hmm.
and so on.
So that's changed for you. And let me ask you, because, I mean, the pressure of having to make money sometimes changes the mental state of an artist. I don't know if that applies to you. I should mention, by the way, that we've got some of your art in a slideshow at our website, nhpr.org/exchange. They can check out some of the things that you've done. What is it like for you mentally to know that, you know, now you can almost continue with your art with a regular paycheck that's not dependent on you going out and meeting people? Because you can't do that right now.
No, I can't meet people. And certainly no more handshakes. And you can't read a smile behind the mask that I wear. Yeah, it's changed things, and as I said, it started changing today. I received that first promise of a relief, so now I will devote myself to working, perhaps on those things that I've wanted to do for a long time that I know at one point or another will become my income again.
Mm-hmm.
But since this began, and up until just this morning, when I saw that in my email, the weight of being way up in the north, where I'm in Berlin. I'm here amidst some of the most beautiful views in the world, perhaps barring the Rockies or the plains or Europe. Wait a minute, we're beautiful everywhere, but I'm way up here, isolated from activity in New Hampshire that may pretty much support the arts on a constant level. So I was having to reach out and walk around. I'm confused. I think every artist out here, every artist in the state of New Hampshire and all over the globe, really, every artist is shaken up by this whole thing, because we do rely upon our relationship with people. We do rely on the eye-to-eye handshake presentation. We do rely on sending our work to galleries and seeing our work in galleries and going to shows to meet people and become commissioned. And I'm a commission artist. That's how I make my money.
Right, right. Well, Andre, I really appreciate you being on the program today. Thank you very much for your insights. Andre Belanger, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope I haven't missed the point.
Oh, no, not at all. No, we appreciate your insights. Andre Belanger is a painter and sculptor, owner of Studio Works Art School and Custom Framing in Berlin. You can see some of his work at our website, nhpr.org. Seems like Amy from Facebook had a sort of similar experience to Andre. She wrote on Facebook, "Our gallery spaces at the Rochester Museum of Fine Arts are located within public buildings, which are currently closed. Gallery closings. We have postponed all of our events in an effort to brighten the days of first responders and essential employees and spread hope and keep working. We have a series of exhibitions planned for the next few months at our pop-up gallery at the vacant Hoffman Building in downtown Rochester. We're able to work with artists via email, print, and install these shows in isolation." Also, Dan commented on Facebook, "Q0 Theater Company attempted online rehearsals, which were going well, but we've postponed our production of Hamlet from June to hopefully August. Have to recast some major roles. It has not been fun." Thanks very much, Dan. We appreciate it. We've got a lot of calls waiting to share their stories with us. Let's talk to Rebecca in Bartlett. Rebecca, thanks very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for having me on your show. Actually, I've been doing these drive-by art shows, and it's been fantastic. I started in my front yard. I just brought a bunch of paintings in the front, and I just tied them to my birch trees, and I had all these local people stop by, and they took photographs of my work and then bought them online, and then I would just bring them to the paintings to their house in gloves with a bottle of champagne, and it's been a lot of fun.
Wow.
Now I have a Yeah, I have a drive-by art show every Saturday now at Harvest Gold Gallery in Lovell, Maine, and that's helping that gallery stay open by having people drive by and see the art as well.
And so is that dependent on the weather, Rebecca, or do you have little tents that you put the art underneath?
It is weather dependent, but my work is oil paint, so if it gets a little wet, it's fine.
Not going to ruin it. Okay, well, that's a great solution, Rebecca. Yes. Thank you very much. I'm sure there are other artists out there thinking, can I convert my lawn into a pop-up art gallery? That's one way to look at it. Let's turn now to a new guest. Let's talk to Kyle Rajot, artistic director at the Palace Theatre in Manchester. He's also a former actor. Kyle, thank you very much for being here. Kyle Rajot, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kyle, a billboard downtown says the Palace Theaters are dark for now, but we're leaving the light on for brighter days to come. What's the Palace Theater hoping to convey to the public?
Absolutely. Well, my staff and I, we consider it, we're trying to stay as positive as possible, and we consider this an intermission. So we will be back. We will turn those lights back on and open the doors and do what we always do, which is, I think people crave entertainment for many reasons. And I give this speech to all my actors every opening night that we have a job. We provide time away from problems for people. We provide a couple hours of laughter, and that's what we look forward to doing. That's what artists, performing artists, want to do. So we're here making sure that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's safe to.
Certainly. And what are you hearing from the many performers that you normally have going through the Palace Theater?
Sure. I mean, well, you know, this pandemic has turned the industry upside down. I don't know an actor across the country who has a job right now. Everyone's out of work. Even survival jobs. A lot of these performers look to restaurants and bars for their survival work when they're out of contract, and that has taken a hit as well. So they, everyone across the board is feeling this.
Mm-hmm. We heard something about something called checkerboard seating at the Palace Theater. This is something you're not doing, but you're thinking of possibly doing. How would this work? What is checkerboard seating?
Well, that's what my staff and I have been doing. We've been strategizing, I guess you'd say, and doing a lot of what if planning. If this happens, we'll do A. If this happens, we'll do B. Checkerboard seating has come up, and thinking that we would cut our capacity in half and make it the job of our box office associates to assign seating that works for social distancing as best as possible.
Mm-hmm. And you may go ahead and reopen with all sorts of safety precautions, maybe checkerboard seating, but are you concerned that the public will still be worried and stay away?
Sure, certainly. I think it's going to take time for people to feel safe again to come out, but also, like I said, in crisis, people crave that entertainment, and we'll be here for them. We'll want to provide entertainment for them and as safe as possible.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just the love for what we do as performers. That is giving me hope, and knowing that our New Hampshire people, we're strong and we're going to come out of this. And, we'll see brighter days.
Brighter days ahead for sure. At least we hope so. Kyle Rajot, artistic director for the Palace Theater in Manchester. Thanks very much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we've still got Eric Gagne, co-founder of Thing in the Spring, on the line. We've still got Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Arts Center. You've been listening in, so go back to you for a moment, Russ. What have you been hearing in both of these callers and the guests that we've had so far talking about their experiences? Anything resonating with you?
Well, yeah, particularly the Alexandria from Soul City Dance and Peggy Center from Concord Community Music School. You know, I live what they're living on a day-to-day basis of how they're adapting to their families. And also what Alexandra mentioned, that when you shift to a situation where you have to work remotely with people in arts education, there are challenges that come up that are unrelated to the arts organization. What type of access do your students have to remote capabilities? What's going on in their own personal lives? Are there sicknesses within their families that they're dealing with? So people become high risk or at risk all of a sudden that we're not at-risk families in the past. So, you know, navigating all of that in a positive way, trying to stay connected with everyone is really important. Also, you know, I do want to touch on what Carl was just talking about with the Palace Theater. Nicolette Clark, who's executive director of the Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, spoke before the governor's office for emergency relief and recovery this past Friday. And, you know, she made a really good point, which is we don't know when performing arts centers in New Hampshire will be allowed to reopen and under what conditions. We don't know which organizations will be economically viable if they're required to operate at a reduced occupancy capacity. We don't know if national touring shows will have enough dates to be viable if there are still hotspots of COVID-19 around the country. We don't know if patrons will feel safe enough to purchase tickets. So she says the unknowns are dizzying and make planning challenging. And I give Carl credit for the strategizing and the planning that he's doing. And I know that the team here in Portsmouth at the Music Hall and Seacoast Rep and New Hampshire Theater Project and 3S Art Space, all these wonderful organizations are doing this. But there are so many unknowns out there. It's really hard to figure out how to navigate. And our hope is that we'll be getting more guidance from the governor's office, more guidance from the CDC about summer camps, about reopening shows in the coming month. But without that guidance, it's going to be very challenging moving forward.
And Eric Gagne, what about you? You've been listening in. What have you been hearing that has been resonating with you?
Well, I guess it's always great to hear all the creative ways that people are adapting to the new environment. And it's kind of a lot of what I've been doing every day with the Nova Arts Block project. Essentially, Brubaker's, which is kind of the classic downtown coffee shop in Keene, is moving around the corner. And, you know, months ago, been working with my friends, the owners of Brubaker's and Terra Nova Coffee Roasters, Jeff and Eliza Murphy. We've been kind of strategizing and figuring out a way to grow this business. And we are renovating this big, beautiful building on Emerald Street in Keene. And there's a beautiful big stage that's been built, and the renovations are still continuing. We were planning on opening this place and having, you know, national touring artists coming through. And so the last couple months have been just a lot of brainstorming and trying to figure out new ways to connect people. It's hard to think about, I know everybody else, earlier in the show, I feel like I was kind of stammering through this idea that I've been thinking about more and more. But as far as like the financial burdens that everyone's having to carry now as performers and arts organizations. And so I guess just thinking about that and being in this place where we're not open yet. We're supposed to open in mid-June. So like Russ was just saying, there's so many variables and nobody knows all this. Yeah. Information that would be important to know to make any kind of plans.
Still waiting on better data for sure. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say I've got shows booked into October that are just kind of like waiting to cancel as we move forward, if that's what's going to happen. But we're also trying to figure out ways to kind of restructure them.
How might they be restructured?
Well, depending on, you know, if. To me, I'm kind of an internal optimist, so I keep thinking like, well, maybe if they're able to make the testing, do much more testing, and we get more data from the CDC and from the state and from the Fed and everything, then, you know, maybe we might be able to do something where we have something outside. You know, maybe we can do, we have some ideas that aren't fully formed yet, that I think would be pretty exciting. One thing that we have started doing is like a collective listening, which we do every Saturday night at 7. We put a new album, not a new album, but we put an album out there. And the idea is just for everyone to put it on at the same time. It doesn't get streamed really. Like it's not a live streaming thing. You're just kind of at 7 o'clock, throw on, you know, this past weekend, we did Aretha Franklin's I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. And
do people, you know, tweet about it in real time as they listen? And with a specific hashtag or something like that?
No, I mean, no, we kind of got away from doing anything like that. The idea is that there's really no, you have no homework, or you don't have to check in, you don't have to just, you know, be there and listen. If we're all kind of tuned to that, to the same vibration at the same time, that can be powerful, albeit maybe on an abstract way. But I've been getting messages from people all over the country, and certain cases all over the world, that have been kind of tuned into doing that, and people really seem to like it and look forward to it. So this is our fourth week doing that. So we're, you know, building on that, we're trying to figure out how can we involve people and connect people. And Brubakers is doing a really great box right now, where you can go on their website and go through, you know, there's flowers, food, coffee, art, all kinds of stuff. You can make a box that will be delivered to you either in Keene or Peterborough, or you can pick it up right at Brubakers.
Well, thank you for that recommendation, Eric Gagne. We really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk with you more. We'll also talk with Russ Grazer a little bit more. We also want to let you know that the New Hampshire State Council on the Arts is accepting applications for the Artist Emergency Grants, a program partially supported by the New England Foundation for the Arts. These are $500 grants available to professional artists whose income has been impacted by COVID-19. Guidelines for these grants have been posted on the New Hampshire State Council on the Arts website, and we have linked to it at nhpr.org/exchange, so check it out there. We're going to take your calls after a break. We'll talk more about what it's like to be an artist and ways to support artists during the COVID-19 pandemic. Give us a call or email us to share your story. Our number is 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. This is The Exchange. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, in this week for Laura Kanoy. And today on the program, we're checking in with New Hampshire's artists and art organizations as they grapple with the coronavirus pandemic. We want to hear your stories about how you are getting by as an artist, or perhaps as a lover of art who's really itching to go back out into the community and engage with artists and their work. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. JJ wrote on our Facebook page, "It's been pretty rough in the fact that all of my shows have been canceled. However, I have taken the opportunity to learn other art forms. Also, many shows that have been canceled have been converted to online shows with no cost involved. So that's nice. Also, James commented on Facebook, two large-scale murals I had scheduled in June and July around the state have been put on hold. As a result, I am looking for ways to creatively problem-solve this huge loss of income." Thanks very much for your comments, James and JJ. And let's talk to Bill in Manchester. Bill, thanks very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I'd just like to tell you guys a little bit about my experience as a local artist and entertainer. I live in Manchester with my wife, Allie Beaudry, she goes by. My name's Bill Feeney. We have a wonderful daughter named Alton. Quick shout out to her. Hi, Alton. So we own the Manch Vegas Brew Bus. We do craft beer tours, and once the brewery and restaurants were shut down, we had to suspend the Brew Bus. In addition to that, I host two trivia nights every week, and those have been canceled. My wife worked at Berklee College of Music, or works at Berklee College of Music, and she was going down in person for work, and all of her work has been converted to online. I've converted my trivia nights to online shows, and the Brew Bus, we haven't figured out a workaround for that yet. I think we're going to need to get a little further away from global health catastrophe before that can get back on the road.
Yeah, certainly putting a lot of people in a bus together might not be a great idea during the time of social distancing. Bill, thank you very much for calling. We got this note from Walter who said, "I had tickets to see various folk musicians whose shows have been canceled. One venue, Club Passam, offered the option of either a refund or contributing the cost of your ticket to the artist and venue. I opted for the latter. Live music is important to me, and I want musicians to be able to continue their craft. I also want musicians to have places to play. In the meantime, I buy CDs and donate when artists are part of an online festival." Thanks very much, Walter. Really appreciate your call, or rather your comments. And let's talk to Miriam in Dublin. Thank you very much for calling. Miriam, what's your story?
My name is Miriam Carter. I'm the executive director of the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen.
Oh, great. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I wanted to share with you that we represent over 700 artists. We're an 88-year-old organization, and we're well known for having the iconic cultural event of the summertime, which is the annual Craftsman's Fair held at Mount Sunapee Resort every year. So as much as I am very concerned about our individual artists, and my team and I are working actively every day to try and support them and their efforts to get through this time, I do want to speak to the importance of the creative economy in the state.
Mm-hmm.
The New Hampshire creative economy is valued at $2.6 billion a year. That annual contribution is larger than construction, education, utilities, transportation, agriculture, forestry, and mining. And when you put in that perspective, all the folks that you're speaking to today are part of that economy, as is the food industry, as is the craft beer industry, as is the performance industry. Everything that's creative is part of that revenue stream, and it all relies on tourism. And tourism is going to be greatly affected by this pandemic. The other day, Steve Dupre testified mm-hmm. with the governor on behalf of the hospitality industry, but he was very helpful in mentioning that tourism is going to be critical when we come back to really drive tourism and the spending on tourism to greater dollars than has ever happened in New Hampshire, because we have to remind people that we're here and that we're an incredible incredible state with incredible, gifted, talented people.
Yeah, certainly. So let me jump in, Miriam, and ask you about the Sunapee Crafts Fair. That's one of the many things that draw people into the state from afar. Is that canceled?
At this time, it is not. We have to rely on our partners in the state, as well as Vail, who owns the lease of Mount Sunapee Resort.
Mm-hmm.
Our board is actively considering our position on this. I can see the direction we're probably aiming, but we're holding out because, you know, that one event for our artists who participate basically represents $2.3 million in sale of craft. And please remember, we also have 9 fine craft galleries throughout the state.
And are they open?
And they sell over $2 million worth of craft.
But are those open right now, those galleries?
No, they're closed. They're working on curbside service. One of the challenges we faced was getting our members and our gallery owners to speed up their learning curve on social media interaction, because many of our artists are of an older demographic and have not been engaged. So we've actually been providing training with Chris Halverson, who has a wonderful training program for social media. She's partnered with us to get our managers up to speed as well as our members up to speed. So we actually currently are offering 17 programs to our members to learn about social media at every level.
Because social media can certainly help them connect with an audience when they're not able to go to those gallery spaces that are closed. Miriam, thank you very much for calling. Really appreciate your comments. Listeners, send us an email if you've got a story to tell us. exchange@nhpr.org is the best way to do that. Let's turn now to Rebecca Fredrickson. Rebecca is an event planner for City Arts Nashua, which promotes visual and performing arts. She's also a painter and has worked as an art teacher in the Merrimack Nashua area. And she's now offering free online tutorials for families seeking creative activities for their children. Rebecca, thanks very much for spending some time with us this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
So in addition to being an artist yourself, you're an event planner for Nashua, for City Arts Nashua. What's been the effect on the arts events in Nashua that you were involved in?
Yeah, so as has been stated by other groups and individuals on the show today, there's been a really significant impact on the local arts community in Nashua in terms of events that have been planned for the spring and the summer. City Arts Nashua, who I'm involved with, had been very far along planning our art awards in Champagne Lunch, which is the premier fundraising event and an event that we use to recognize leaders in the arts in the community, had been scheduled for April 19th. And long about mid-March, when everything started to transpire, we were able to reschedule our event to November 8th. So we're very enthusiastically planning that, although we are looking at alternatives in terms of what the needs might be at that time in terms of a larger gathering.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to keep an ear to that as well.
And what kind of, if I could stop you for a moment, what kind mm-hmm. of interesting alternatives have you thought of as a way to keep things going?
So as other organizations have done, we might turn it into a virtual event if we're not able to do a physical event. We really are hopeful to have it still an in-person event with a live and silent auction and performances. But if it's something that we need to do virtually, then we'll definitely do that and move ahead with that.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of conversations are you having with artists about the future?
So I think that in terms of what the artists want to do, I think part of it is just really being flexible. And I think that artists know and understand that they have an important role coming back from COVID and from this crisis. And, you know, the whole world's having sort of this collective experience, right, of, you know, people being sick and economic uncertainty and instability. And it's really traumatic. And I think it's really important for artists and arts organizations to be able to offer an avenue to share and process and document experiences. So, and also bring life back into society, right? So we're aware of that, and we're working on looking at different ways to do that and to reach out and to connect for the future. And I think one of the things that has come out of all this, and other organizations have said, is artists are resilient and they're flexible and they're problem solvers. So, even some are getting opportunities out of this, like the One Music School had that connection now in London that they didn't have before. So just really looking at how we're envisioning how we connect with the community and creating opportunities to connect virtually has been a big deal.
So, Rebecca, you said that you're an artist as well and that artists are resilient. So in what ways have you found that you are showing resiliency in this difficult time?
So I think for me personally, and everybody's responding to it differently, right? Some artists are finding challenges and maybe in a little bit of a block because of stresses that are happening. I think for me personally, it's been sort of more of a call to action, and there's been a little more sense of urgency for me to like communicate and connect through the arts. And so I've been doing some live streaming on my Facebook of myself working, which is usually a pretty personal process. So that's different and unique for me.
Live streaming for on Facebook, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So sharing how I paint and when I you know, how I create and actually videotaping myself painting, which is probably, I think most people who know me have maybe never watched me paint because I'm so private about it.
So in some ways, this has opened up your creative life to the world.
Right. Absolutely. And also I'm wanting to help provide opportunities for families and people to connect, to make their own art. So I've also been doing some little tutorials with my family and live streaming those, just how-tos. Even like I did a little experimental one with a process I'd never tried before, and just to kind of show that, you know, things don't always come out the way we want them to, and it's okay if you're not a person that's comfortable doing art to try it, and you know, you never know what's going to happen when you create. So,
final question for you, Rebecca, mm-hmm. really quickly: what do you most want to convey to the public, including to those who regularly support the arts, about how they should be supporting the arts in this difficult time?
Well, I think that first and foremost, you know, the arts, you know, City Arts Nashua artists are here for you, and we want to continue to be here for you and part of the recovery, and that we will help provide positive and enriching experiences for the community. I think that it's really important that folks understand how important it is that arts organizations and artists are able to remain sustainable financially. And the way we do this is support from the community. If you're decorating your house, instead of going to a chain store and buying a piece of artwork for $125 that's been mass-produced in a factory, go buy. You could probably buy a few pieces of artwork or a small piece of art from a local artist and support that artist. And also corporations and foundations need to support the arts as well. I think that we're all... Again, it's that we're all in this together, mm-hmm. and together we can come back from this, right? It's just support.
Rebecca, certainly, thank you very much for those comments. Really appreciate it. Rebecca Fredrickson, event planner for City Arts Nashua. We appreciate your time. Thank you. And thanks also to Eric Gagne, co-founder of Thing in the Spring and Broke, the Affordable Arts Fair, and Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Arts Center. Thank you both very much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. Conversation continues online, though, at our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, and at NHPR.org. The show's producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brinley is our program manager. And our regular theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Engineer today is Dan Colgan. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.